Commerce, PhRMA, the Professional Human Resources Management Association, and get employers to understand what Ban the Box or the Fair Chance Initiative is really all about. There's a lot of misinformation out there already about it. When I was talking to employers about coming today, they were just like, no, you know, don't want to have that discussion about banning the box. So I think there's a lot of work. We did a lot of work on the phone about this. And they asked about city and county outcomes. If this has been endorsed over a year ago with city and county, what are the outcomes and what were the lessons learned? One of the largest employers wanted to know. And that they felt that an education campaign for employers, that they understand the benefits and that they really reduce the mythology and fear. And one employer asked me, you know, what is the enforcement? I heard Judy talk about that. Because without enforcement, he called it a toothless tiger. And in closing, I just want to say that Southeast Works is a second chance employer, and 16% of my labor force have backgrounds. I've established baselines for hiring. We have a school on premises, and so contractually I have to look at that. But we want to give people a second chance. And we really believe that a charge and a criminal background is not a life sentence. And this is what happens when you're checking off boxes for either employment or housing. Applicants are put in the situation of being screened out before they're able to really describe what they have to give to that employer. They don't have the chance to say how long ago the criminal activity has been or what they were charged or incarcerated with. What they've done since then, we have many that have come in and done a lot of community work. So how do they get to explain that if they're screened out? And most of all, you know, what are their skills and abilities and the ability to sit in front of someone and be able to discuss that? We also know that this checkbox, because of our work, really affects communities of color who are overrepresented in the justice system. And we need to think about that as we look at this. And we really encourage employers to ban the box, take a thoughtful look at this, establish a baseline for hiring, and assist those who want to work and be crime-free, and overall reduce recidivism and really, you know, make that change in the community. So I thank you today for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions for you? Thank you very much, Holly. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay, we have some more folks that are in the business of getting people hired. Patrick Gearing, Andrew McGuff, and Pat Daniels from Work Systems, Inc. and Constructing Hope. Would you come up? Two out of three, anyway. Well, come on in.
Three.
Pat Daniels.
Yes.
Wasn't able to make it.
Hi, Mr. Mayor and Commissioner. My name is Jacqueline Witt, and I'm here representing Constructing Hope.
Good. Who's first?
Well, I guess I'll kick it off because I'm the more generic spokesperson here. My name is Andrew McGough. I'm the executive director of Work Systems, Inc. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for the opportunity to speak to you today and council members the same. Part of our responsibility is, as Holly just testified, is to oversee the region's workforce development system. We call that WorkSource Portland Metro locally. And in our five centers last year, we served 101,000 job seekers across the region. 9% of those job seekers, or more than 9,000 people, self-disclosed having a criminal background. Research shows that a good job is one of the best ways to prevent ex-offenders from committing new crimes. Unfortunately, finding a good job is one of the most difficult tasks for former offenders. Recent survey results suggest that between 60 and 75% of ex-offenders are jobless up to a year after release. Research conducted by the National Institute for Justice has shown that most employers are reluctant to hire applicants with criminal records. In a study conducted in New York City, for example, a criminal record reduced the likelihood of a callback or job offer by nearly 50%. In the same New York City study, employment prospects for applicants with criminal records improved when applicants had an opportunity to interact with the hiring manager. The study concluded that personal interaction between the applicant and the prospective employer was a key factor in successful hiring. While I know there will be some controversy surrounding the specifics, and I think Commissioner Fish pointed that out quite well today, I'm convinced we can find common ground and figure out ways to remove impediments for people with criminal backgrounds to reconnect with the labor market. Basic things we know are effective, like removing the question from the application and ensuring that people have an opportunity to interact face-to-face, these should be front and center with whatever policy or regulations emerge. As a local employer, I can speak from personal experience to the benefits of these kinds of practices. We have the option to do a criminal background check as a condition of employment. This does not happen until the offer stage, and it is at our discretion. We made an offer to a person where we discovered an extensive criminal record, including spending time in prison. However, through the interview process, we decided to give her a shot. She has turned out to be a great member of our team, and she has proven to be the right person for the job. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Welcome.
Is this remaining time cumulative here for all three of us?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
I'll keep it short. Hi, my name is Jacqueline, and I wanted to share part of my story because I think it's imperative that we ban the box to help individuals like myself be able to secure employment so we don't return back to the same behaviors that we had. And I have a lot of skills to present to an employer, and I've done a lot of programs in public service, and I have really began to understand the important things in life and how to go about establishing relationships. And I have had wonderful people teaching me in organizations such as Mercy Corps and Constructing Hope and Better People, and I'm currently employed at Red Lodge Transition Service, which is an agency that helped me. They helped me. I volunteered for them when I got out of prison, and they actually hired me for a part-time position. But had it not been for them, I wouldn't have an income, and I just want to ask that ban the box be instated so individuals like myself can raise ourselves up out of poverty and secure a decent income to be able to live and thrive instead of just survive. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks. I'm Patrick Gehring. I'm also from Work Systems, Inc. We manage the Economic Opportunity Program, which is a city program that serves about 700 low-income Portland residents who have barriers to employment. Of the people served in this program, about 300 or 40% are ex-offenders. Ex-offenders are served across the array of partners within the network, and as you've heard, there's special projects at Southeast Works and Constructing Hope that are focused on serving these population with employment services. We provide an array of specialized services through the WorkSource system. You've heard a little bit about those earlier from Holly that support the employment goals of people served in the Economic Opportunity Programs. These services include job clubs for ex-offenders, workshops to help people communicate with employers about their backgrounds, internships for people with limited work experience, and training in occupations that offer more opportunities and open doors for ex-offenders. 58% of the people who have criminal backgrounds served in this program enter employment during the course of their participation at an average wage of 13 an hour. We think that's good, but it could be a lot better if there were more open doors for this population. The approach of leading with strengths and giving job seekers a chance to communicate what they have to offer to an employer before they're screened out or need to talk about the checks against them is something that we support. I'd also add, for the many people we serve who have a 10 or more year gap in their employment history, for them, the barrier is bigger than a box. They often need career coaching, job training, and help connecting to employers. That's why I'm also here to support the employment program services that you're hearing about today, and we believe this is also an important part of the solution.
Mayor, can I ask Andrew?
Yes, please,
a question?
Questions.
Andrew, and you may have already sort of touched on this, but you estimate that about how many people might in Multnomah County might benefit from this change in the law?
Well, if it's 9%, 10% of the labor market, 15,000 people.
And what are the, if from your experience, what are the kinds of jobs that people are competing? I know it's hard to generalize, but what are some of the categories of jobs that people who are coming out of the criminal justice system are competing for?
Well, we hope they're middle skill jobs that pay livable wages. So we like to focus on careers in manufacturing, construction. There are certain industries that definitely are more favorable for people re-entering the labor market with criminal backgrounds. Healthcare, for example, is not an industry that we have a lot of success with ex-offenders.
But you have had some with the trades.
Yes.
And we also know that there are some programs that the trades are running in facilities where people can get their, do some apprentice work, get their certification, and be job ready.
Absolutely. Yes. So there's a lot of that work going on. It's increasing. The use of like certifications, industry recognized certifications, and other sort of competency based measures are really effective with these kinds of populations. So,
thank you all.
Andrew, what you said, we haven't been particularly successful in the healthcare sector. Is there
with ex offenders?
Yeah, I mean, is there a reason?
Well, I think that a lot of the occupations within the healthcare system require relationships with patients and individuals and access to potentially drugs, and just the environment is a little bit more challenging, I think.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for coming. So speaking of employers, let's call a panel of four of them. Jim Hauser from Hawthorne Auto, Bill Dickey from Morrell Inc., London Elliott from Family Story, and Jed Wrench from Bula Baba House. Come on up, please. Jim, I think you're on first if you'd like to be.
Thank you.
Just swing that over to you. It will move.
There you go. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Jim Hauser, and my wife and I own and operate Hawthorne Auto Clinic at 4307 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. We have for 32 years. I'm also co-chair of the Main Street Alliance of Oregon, a network of 2,500 Oregon small business owners working together to lift up the real voices of small business on public policy. 28 years ago, I hired an employee who was upfront about his criminal history. He just recently retired after three decades of one of our best employees. Having a criminal record doesn't mean being a bad employee. In my experience, people with criminal records are often model employees. They are frequently the most dedicated and conscientious. A lot of doors are shut to them, so when someone gives them an opportunity, they make the most of it. Postponing a criminal background check or asking candidate questions about arrest or conviction records unrelated to job duties until after a job offer has been made gives an employer the opportunity to appreciate that the best person for the job may in fact have a record. In fact, company policies requiring early background investigations may not be in the best interest of either the applicant or the company. From my perspective, why would an employer want to short-circuit the hiring process and deny themselves the opportunity to hire the best person for the job? In the end, what's good for my community is good for my business. As a small business owner, I know that when people have opportunities to succeed, the local community and economy thrives, and in turn, my company thrives. Thank you.
Thank you. Dickey, why don't you go next? Just swing that over to you there. There you are.
My name is Bill Dickey. I'm the co-owner of Morrell Inc. out in Northeast Portland. We're a commercial printing company. I apologize. I left my talking points at home, so I'm going to have to do this off the cuff. But I think that this banning the box movement itself is just sort of ending a stereotype. I think that... From our personal company's experience, we've had about 12% of our workforce have criminal backgrounds. One that developed while they were on staff, one that The person came to us and said, I need help getting a job. I've got this problem. And we hired them. In all cases, these employees have worked out to be great people and do a wonderful job. And we haven't had a negative result in the case of any of it. I think that the listening to the ordinance, it got very confusing for me because to me, all this does is just eliminates the eliminating an employee out of hand without having a chance to have a conversation with the employee first. If you and the employee, prospective employee, have a chance to get to know one another and the employee divulges this thing in his past, then you get to make the decision. But if you're just looking at a stack of applications and this box is checked and you pass that without talking to the person first, it eliminates you from the opportunity to maybe develop a great relationship and have a great employee. So I don't think it really changes anybody's hiring practices. It just gives you an opportunity to meet with a person that you might otherwise not get to talk to who could be a great, valuable asset for your business. And I think that pretty much covers my testimony. I've covered my points in my iPad.
Thank you very much. Mr. Elliott?
Yes. Hi, my name is Judd Wrench. I own a business called Bula Kava House. We're a cafe in southeast Portland. I have an online store as well. This is our fourth year in business. Pretty quickly, we've gone to, we're projecting about $500,000 in sales this year from my small business. I'm also a convicted felon, and I have two other misdemeanors as well on my record. I was pretty lucky in that when I had this idea for my business. Now I had some good support financially, and also just just some backing otherwise. But a lot of people with a background like mine, they don't have that same support. And if I didn't have the support that I did have, I mean, there's no way I would have been able to do what I'm doing now. I definitely would have a hard time finding any job because I think as he was saying, that having that box on an application that's on so many is just, people just automatically look at it like, well, this is no longer a viable employee. And I think my story is so applicable because obviously I'm a viable employee. I think if I didn't own my own business, I'd be valuable to a lot of different employers. And I think banning the box it's just really important to get past that and to decide if someone's a viable employee based on something else. Right now I have six employees. I haven't done a background check on any of them. I just don't see it very in my business, and I know it's different from business, but in my business I just don't see it very valuable to know that. I think it's much more valuable sitting down and talking with someone and then talking to their other references. I think makes a lot more sense. I support this, and I think that I'm proof that a criminal background check is definitely something that shouldn't exclude you from a job offer in the first place.
So. Thanks very much. Appreciate you being here.
Listening.
Thanks for coming. Welcome. There's a little button on the bottom of that. There you go. Just push that button, and it'll turn it on. There you are.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
That's loud. Hi. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and members of the Portland City Council. My name is London Elliott, and I am currently a senior at Jefferson High School and also an emerging leader with the Urban League of Portland Social Justice and Civic Leadership Program. I urge you to support the Fair Chance for All Ban the Box Ordinance because I believe it could help families like mine. I've seen firsthand the problem that people who have prior arrests or convictions have finding a job when they come back to wider society. I've seen my grandma struggle with finding a job that would help her support her family as a single mother. I've seen how stressful it is and how hard she has worked to put food on the table, to keep the water on and the lights running, to keep a roof over her and her five children's heads. Currently, my older brother is in jail. And we have to worry if he will ever be able to get a job because he did something stupid when he was 15 years old. Once he gets out, he'll be expected to be a member of our society, which means getting a job. I have a cousin who is now an award-winning author, but wouldn't have this chance if no one gave him that chance. If they looked at his prior jail time instead of his abilities, he wouldn't be where he is today, and everybody reads author. Who knows what my brother could be when he gets out of jail? Without passing the Ban the Box ordinance, he will be another person in our economy struggling for a job. Thank you for your time, and I really hope you pass the ordinance to give a fair chance to all people.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well done. Thank you all. Any questions? Appreciate you being here. Thank you very much. So our next panel are some folks that are also personally involved in this transition, getting people through that transition, Sonia Scarla, Meg Warden, and Aiden Warden from A Social Ignition. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll start. Hello. Again, my name is Sonia Scavarla. I'm the founder and CEO of an organization called A Social Ignition. We teach entrepreneurship and business inside of our incarceration, and we coach members of our class through their transition and into the job force. We teach both at Columbia River Correctional Institution up on Columbia Way and in the Multnomah County Jail. I'm here today to talk to you about this particular issue because it's close to my heart, but not because I've ever been incarcerated, not because I've known anybody who's incarcerated, although now I know many. But before I started this work, I didn't. For me, it comes from a place of participation and economic accessibility, and the fact that without true economic accessibility for all people, we don't actually have a democracy. And in my opinion, the economic accessibility and everybody's ability to participate will actually help us solve all sorts of social problems due to the diverse... This is making me a little emotional. Thank you for bearing with me. The diverse voices, and although I have not been incarcerated, so I can't speak to the experience of someone who has. So it is really important for me to hear their voice in all decision-making arenas, which is why I teach this work. Business is a key to any sort of positive change. It is a huge power source in the way that we conduct ourselves in this country. And providing men with an opportunity to speak the language of business will help them move forward in that way. So the other piece to our program is not only teaching business, but every time we go into the prison, we bring business leaders with us so that the ban the box is not an issue because they're breaking down the stigmas and stereotypes and building relationships based on the language of business and not on any prior conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Ms. Warden, welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Meg Warden. Thanks for letting me speak. I am the Director of Strategic Partnerships for A Social Ignition with Sonia. I also have a private health coaching business and speak all over the country and soon internationally to entrepreneurs. I am very open about my criminal history. I have a felony. I was served time in prison for selling drugs from 2003 to 2005. It has been, from the beginning of my release, incredibly important to me that I would be able to live in a place free of stigma, which has taken a lot of work because that's not where we're living. It was really important to me that my son didn't have the stigma of my criminal activity that happened before he was born. And so I've worked really, really hard on being able to tell this story in a way that engenders compassion and support rather than judgment and fear. Fortunately for me, I have some privileges financially and culturally and educationally that other people don't have, and I've been able to
withstand the long process after prison it took to try to find a job, which never really happened. It was incredibly dehumanizing. It was incredibly discouraging. Every time I had to check that box without a face-to-face meeting, I never got a face-to-face meeting. When I did get a face-to-face meeting, I was put in a position after having served my time, after having actually done everything I was supposed to do to pay for this crime, I was still paying for it. I was still being asked to prove myself as a person and as a human. And that's an incredibly hard thing to do with the privileges I had. So I want to say I cannot even imagine what it's like to be in another position, but I've been fortunate enough actually at this point to have worked as a mentor and as a teacher to many people inside and outside of prison. And this is a population that is in huge part incredibly hungry for opportunity. They are amazing workers. They are people who also in large part have done something with their available skill set and tools rather than nothing. And often those available tools were not viable or legal. And I've watched them be, in myself included, be able to take new skill sets and new tools and new support systems and do amazing things with them. I'm absolutely in support of this ordinance because it effectively eliminates legal discrimination for a group of people that, when employed, when they're able to have the opportunity to participate in our economy, not only benefits us fiscally, but also gives us the opportunity to live in a society that is richer, more diverse, and more merciful. And this is, frankly, this is a world I want to live in. And so this work is really important to me, and it's a world I really want my son to live in. And I think that's about it.
Is this poised young man your son?
The guy to my right is here to hopefully pull your heartstrings a little. He's done a great job, and it is my absolute
Looks like a very serious man.
Just his presence is here to pull your heartstrings. But it's really important to me that he gets to live in an environment that is free from stigma, because there's, you know, I don't have the exact numbers, but it is a it is very common that the children of people who have been incarcerated are incarcerated as well. And also, he doesn't deserve to grow up in a world where he has to live with the stigma of my mistakes. And so,
can I ask you just to get some parenting advice?
Please.
Because I think your son's about the age of my son. And
he's 12, almost 13.
Yeah, so my son is almost 12. And when we go to church or we go to special events, he refuses to wear a tie or a jacket. So do you have any?
Maybe Aiden has some advice for your son.
Would you like to answer that question, Aiden?
Yeah, Aiden. We'd love to hear from you, Aiden. So.
I don't really know. I just am fine with wearing a tie.
He's got great style.
Man, a few words, but very powerful words.
Did you want to say anything at all about
this
ordinance?
What's this whole experience of your mom being able to finally work been like for you? Is it
I don't know. It's been hard to. A lot of stuff's happened. I don't really know how to explain it. I'm bad at speeches.
And you're doing fine.
Doing all right.
So,
are you proud of your mom?
Mm-hmm, very. She's worked very hard to get where she is. So, I support the ordinance, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so that.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you being here.
Aiden, thank you for standing up for your mom and for all people who need help. A little bit of help like her. Thank you for being here. That was really helpful.
You're welcome.
Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Okay. We have some folks who are now in the process of seeking work that we want to hear from. Trenton Anderson and Mike DiEprio. Trenton and Mike, are you here? Yes, they are. Good afternoon and welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Hells, for letting me come up here and speak to you today and the members of the board.
Just give us your name and have it. Say your piece.
I'm Trenton Anderson. I'm a convicted felon. I've just recently gotten released, probably about 3 days ago. You know, there's a lot of thoughts that go through my mind when it comes to going out and looking for work. That box is one of them. I've made some pretty poor choices in my life. It took me about 3 minutes to make choices that costed me 3 years of my life, which in those 3 years I made a lot of choices that helped me rechannel my thoughts and my thinking and become a part of groups that helped me make the right choices, which is Phoenix Rising and Social Ignitions. With that said, I was able to work with them in there, not only in there, but they were here for me to support me once I got out. I totally am against the whole check in the box thing because the choices that I've made in the past should be left in the past. Now, whether it, you know, gives them the right to discriminate against me for the fact that of what I committed in the past, I feel is shouldn't be valid at that point in my application or even in my resume, because you know I've did a lot of work being in prison. I've gotten 23 certificates of completion. I've spent 3 years correcting something that a choice that I made in a matter of 3 minutes. So with that said, I think that there's a lot of things that need to be done here. And social stigma, to me, is the same thing as racism. I think they coincide because it helps somebody make a decision upon somebody, you know, for you know what the appearance of what they look like is. And I don't think that's right. I don't agree with it. I'm pretty much on the equal opportunity rights. You know, we're all Americans. We're all here to try to do the right thing for the right reasons, because that's the right thing to do. So,
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Michael DePiro. I want to thank you for having me. A lot of the things that Trent here said, there's a lot of similarities to my story as well. I was just released in December after doing 6 years in prison. Before I was in prison, I had an extensive employment history with a couple different employers. I had a lot of sales jobs that I was involved in, a lot of sensitive customer information that I was used to handling. Now that I've gotten out of prison, it has been absolutely impossible to get back into the field that I was in because of the crime that I committed. I have had a dozen or so employers that have denied me immediately once they found out that I had a felony. I'm in the process right now where I actually do have two conditional offers, one from a large company and one from a smaller company, but it's all pending on my background. I've been absolutely upfront about what I've done. Even in the interview, there was a gap in my employment. When I wasn't involved in school while I was in prison, where they questioned me about it in the interview, and I was, you know, humbly spoke to them about it, and they said, well, we really like you, we'd like to offer you the job, but it's depending upon what our corporation says. It makes it very difficult, definitely very, very, very difficult having a felony. And, you know, for the, like I said, the dozen or so employers that I have applied with, for them just to deny me just because I have a felony, you know, I do believe that it is a form of discrimination because I'm more than qualified for the positions that I've applied for. I mean, the positions I've applied for, again, I'm more than qualified to do them, but just because I had to check that box, they denied me. So, you know, I have 4 children, and they do live with me. And I have it makes it hard, you know. And luckily, I'm in a position where I have somebody in my family who owns a business that I'm able to work for at this time, not enough to support my children the way that they need to be supported, though. So I spoke my piece.
Thank you. Thank you both. I heard some great presentations from people involved in this program, including you, and seeing the skills that these programs impart to people or let them polish and then have them get out in the workforce and not be able to put them to use is wrong. So we wish you well.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next panel is from a number of organizations in the community that have worked on this issue, from the NAACP, James Posey, from APANO, Joseph Santos Lyons, from NIA, Kerry Walters, and from Hacienda, Victor Merced. Come on up. There's a fourth chair if you're all here. So,
Mayor and Commissioners, somehow my name got put on for the NAACP, and we have Joanne.
She's here?
Okay. She's here, and I don't think, is she here? She can talk about...
James, she put you on. It's the only way she can get you to pay the dues, you promised.
All right. I would like to come up and talk about my small business.
Okay, well, we'll do that, too. So, okay. Thank you. All right. Joanne, would you like to go ahead?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. For the record, I'm Joanne Hardesty, and I am not speaking on behalf of the NAACP because of the time period that's required for a membership organization to take a vote. But as a longtime community member who's worked on criminal justice issues, I am here in total support of the measure that you're voting on today. I want to remind the audience that we Oregonians went from a rehabilitation to a punitive state in our Constitution as it relates to people being incarcerated. When we passed ballot measure 11, we decided that 15-year-olds should go to adult jails. When we decided that 5 years and 10 months, because Kevin Mannix at his kitchen table decided that was an appropriate mandatory minimum sentence, when we voted that into law, we forgot that 97.5% of people who go to jail come back to the local communities. We forgot that state law requires them to come back to their home county. Those resources don't follow those people back to their home county. If we want people to have dignity and be part of our community, part of dignity is having a job. Part of dignity is being able to feed your family. Part of dignity is being able to say, I paid for my mistakes, but today I'm a better person because of it. If we don't believe in second chances, then we are a community that I do not want to live in. I think, but for the grace of God, certainly myself, my family members, many people could be incarcerated. It's the luck of the draw, especially if you're African American, if you're low income, if you're from communities that investments have not been made in, because those are the people that end up in our criminal justice system. And if you have mental health issues, those are the people that end up in our criminal justice system. So when people come back and they're willing to work, because we make them work 40 hours while they're in prison, and they're making slave labor wages while they're in prison. We make that. We make them do that 40 hours a week. But when people want to voluntarily work, we create barriers for people to do that. They're from our community, so it's not like these are foreign-born aliens that somebody dropped into our community. They came from this community. They should come back to the community, and we should do all we can to make sure that they can be productive members of our community. And so I appreciate this ordinance coming in front of you. I appreciate your attention today to this, and I hope you will set a standard and a model that says that everyone's entitled to a second chance, and if you show that you're willing to work, that we'll show we're willing to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
I'd like to go next, Kerry. What's up, EAT? My name is Kerry Waters. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the Native American Youth and Family Center here today. I'm also a member of the Tlingit Tribe and a Portlander, so and a former team member of Commissioner Fritz, so it's exciting to be here in this capacity. For the past 500 years, we indigenous peoples of North America have experienced terrible injustices. We are disproportionately impacted by the criminal justice system at staggering rates, and I know many amazing community leaders and families that have been impacted directly and indirectly by the system, myself included, that have so much to give and should not be unfairly impacted by the stigma associated with this status. Through our engagement on this issue, our community has become very excited and encouraged by this step in the right direction to reverse the injustices of our society. So by your action here, you are affirming your commitment to equity and justice. So I hope that this is eventually extended to the state and housing as well. But even having this conversation is a victory in and of itself. So thank you for your bravery and leadership on this initiative.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Victor Merced, Executive Director of Hacienda CDC. Commissioners, thank you for inviting us to testify on the Ban the Box initiative. I will say that at Hacienda, we employ 44 staff. We have some ex-offenders on staff. As a matter of fact, I just recently hired someone to my management team that had an extensive criminal history. And one might ask, well, why did you hire that person? And quite frankly, she was the best and continues to be one of the highest performing employees that we have at Hacienda. We have close to 400 units of housing that we have on Killingsworth and Cully, and we have ex-offenders that live in those housing units. We also are opening the first Latino Mercado on 72nd and Foster, and there is an ex-offender among some of the micro mercantes. So we believe in giving people a second opportunity, a second chance, and not having to repay their debt to society over and over and over again. I just want to say one little thing about when I was the housing director for Governor Kulongoski. To get ex-offender housing funded was one of the most difficult projects we ever had to undertake at the state. As a matter of fact, it took me 3 years before we actually funded an ex-offender housing project, both in Klamath Falls and in Eugene. And it took an extraordinary lift from myself, from my staff, from the governor himself to intervene because of the NIMBYism that was associated with relocating those folks to those projects. So I believe that once you've paid your debt to society, you're done and you move forward. So I thank you all for taking this initiative forward. And by the way, there are about half a dozen television cameras outside waiting to talk to you all. And I plan to be one of them because I want to address the issue publicly as well. But I think this is a great opportunity for you all to show some leadership, and I'm glad that you're taking this forward. Thank you again. Appreciate
you.
The time.
Thanks very much. James.
Yes, good afternoon, Mayor Hales and rest of City Council. You know, as I listen to the testimony here, I have so many emotions because I come at this at so many levels. You know, I am actually here as a representative for the Coalition of Black Men. I'm also a small business owner. I have a deli on the corner of MLK and Stanton. It's been there for 15 years. I had an open invitation to a commissioner, Fish, to come by. He says he's never been there. But I don't know. 15 years ago, that corner was a cross between prostitution and druggies coming from Dawson Park, that intersection that was really a kind of hole in the wall. And so I started this deli, restaurant, a place where people can come to the internet and, you know, do their laundry. It's really a pretty novel idea. Most of the people that I hire comes from that community. And I feel pretty proud of trying to hold down that corner because there really is a stigma about Northeast Portland and especially African Americans, and to be able to overcome that stigma, to be able to provide jobs and give people a productive and insightful look at Black people doing something productive. You know, I hasten to say that the stereotypical view of what Black men do and how they do it is not a good one. And that's another reason why I started my construction business. You know, you all see my crews out there putting down asphalt and doing work. It's a labor of love, trying to introduce the idea that Black people can do something positive, constructive. I don't know if people understand that work defines you. And if you don't have a job, if you're not doing anything productive, then it becomes more than a depressing thing for you. It really colors your whole existence. And I was struck by the lady's comment about being a death sentence. I don't know if people understand. When a person can't get a job, it's not only a death sentence for that individual, but it's a death sentence for their entire family. We have grown men living with their mothers who can't feed their children. This is just the minimum that you can do in terms of changing, turning that around. So I implore you to continue to make these situations available for people to work who really want to show what they can do in this community. And your leadership is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have a few more folks that we asked to come here today. Some other folks looking for work, Jill Heisman, Thivu, and Emmanuel Price. Welcome.
Good evening.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mayor Hales and commissioners, my name is Jill Hymanson. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I really appreciate it. I live in Southeast Portland. After a series of unfortunate family events, I was married for almost 20 years to a dentist, and when we split his practice, he decided to stop working his practice, so the practice went under. We went through a bankruptcy, a foreclosure, and then he got remarried and decided to go after my kids. And that's when I made a huge mistake. We were in a long, protracted custody battle, and I made a mistake and landed with two misdemeanor assault charges. That mistake that landed me the 3 years of probation, which included plenty of taxpayer rehabilitation services, including anger management classes, parenting classes, community services, and so forth. My first point I want to make is having to go through these kind of rehabilitative services, and then when you're finished with them, being basically discarded by society, it makes it so it's kind of pointless to even go through those services to begin with. My second point is that after this incident, well, actually during the incident, I was going to college at Portland State, getting my economics degree, with the goal of being able to earn enough money to take care of myself and my children. Unfortunately, I ended up with $70,000 in student loans that I cannot pay off because I've been applying for full-time jobs for the last year and have barely gotten an interview. And when I have gotten an interview, it's been, do I bring this topic up or do I not bring it up? And if I don't, then if you know they hire me, that it makes it for a very unfortunate, complicated situation. So I admit my mistake. I've taken full responsibility for it. Now I just really am looking forward to having a chance to move on. And this ban the box would really make a huge difference for me. I just had a few other points I want to bring up with the testimony. Commissioner Salzman, you were wondering how this would work with a small business. So the last job I did have, I was working at McCullough Research. When we went through the interview, it's a very small consulting firm. There's only a few people that work there. During the interview process, he didn't ask about any of this kind of stuff because he's an economist and typically I have an unusual background.
We're the reason he has a thriving business.
Yeah. Well, good. I'll make sure I tell him that next time I see him. But anyway, so the topic never really came up until several months after me working there, and it was just this process would give somebody like me a point in the interview process where I can be, because I am not interested in not telling the truth and not being fully disclosing the things that have happened to me, but in the same token, I want to be able to find employment. And so this process gives me a chance to be honest with the employers before they're hired, and so everybody knows we're on the same page. So the second thing, Mr. Fish, you had mentioned about the notices, you have to have employment notices that they post that has, you were saying where employers,
So I was just, as a former employment lawyer representing plaintiffs, I was just trying to think of an example where when you did not hire someone, you were required to give them a document that set forth all their legal rights, because what I was looking for was an analogy that we could piggyback off of, because it's not the forms you're talking about are legally required to be posted, and they, like the minimum wage and sick leave, those kinds of things. This would be a separate notice. And I'm just trying to figure out where has that been tried and has it worked?
Okay, I don't actually have it. I was just thinking that they have the employment notices up there that they have.
Well, it might actually, that's a good idea. It might be something that is simply posted at the workplace, so that takes care of the notice.
Yeah.
It might even be better than giving a separate notice.
Correct. Okay, that sounds great. The other thing is the two-day notification period, I agree with you that it's too short. I've been in a situation where I've had to have been given notice, and then the next day I have to be in court, and there's very little time to prepare, and it's just, I'm thinking at least 5 business days would be fair. That's just my humble opinion. And then the final thing I wanted to say is about your having the administrative process to go through as opposed to having it be a court process, because like you were saying, hiring, I've called around many lawyers, and they all want $5,000 for a contingency fee, which if you're unemployed looking for work is really out of, it's not going to happen. So. With that, thank you for allowing me to speak today, and I truly hope you will support this bill.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Who'd like to be next? Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Tivu. So Mayor Hales, council members, you know, my niece and nephew, they say that I'm the greatest uncle in the world. But today, what I am is that I'm a student of Portland Community College. I'm a full-time employed member of society today. I balance my passion for art and my passion for helping others. It doesn't always work the way I plan, but in the end, most like everyone else, I do my best and I leave the rest up to the power greater than myself. So this wasn't always the case. As in the past, my being able to be gainfully employed was hampered by many things, the most significant one being past felony record and the box that read, have you ever been convicted of a felony? When I would answer truthfully, I was always denied an interview. When I would lie and get the interview, most times I would get the job. Unfortunately, I always worked hard. I would get promotions and eventually would have to do the background check in order to advance further, and my felonies would be found out and I would be terminated. My employers always said that they regretted having to do this because of policy, but when I asked them if they would have given me the interview, had I answered truthfully, the answer was always no. So when the campaign came for Ban the Box, I saw this as a solution, and not only for myself, but for many others that will come after me searching for a chance to fit back in and participate in society. Banning the box will allow someone such as myself the opportunity to get into an interview and present myself as how I am today, not how I was. It will allow my potential employers the opportunity to weigh my worthiness based on my present self rather than my past self. So what I'm asking you today is to help support Ban the Box campaign. Vote your approval for it. Please allow men and women like myself a chance to prove ourselves based on our actions today. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome. Or thank you. My name is Emmanuel Price. I'm the founder of SCAFE, Second Chances Are for Everyone. It's a nonprofit organization I founded about 4 years ago to help men and women after they transition from prison to society. And I also am a human rights commissioner. I also am a Metropolitan Public Board member. I'm also an HIV AIDS and awareness prevention person, which all the work that they do is inside the prisons. I'm also a convicted felon. I spent 4.5 years of my life in Oregon correctional facilities. I'm born and raised from Portland. After completing my sophomore year in college in Virginia, I came back to Portland, made an idiot mistake with some idiot friends, and ended up going from a full-time student to a full-time prisoner in the correctional facilities. A lot of what we do, SCAFE, and just some of the other work I do, is about building relationships with businesses and employers. And for me, it's... I suffer the same things everybody else has suffered as far as looking for employment. Most recently, I'll share this little story. I was hired by one agency to work with pretty much kids in the school district. I'm very transparent about my background. It's on the back of my cards, on my business cards. And instead of letting society hold my background over my head continually where it would cost me a job or an apartment, I decided to take all that pain and anguish and turn it into SCAFE. So I disclosed my background on every application. And with the entity that hired me, they had a contract with someone else to work, you know, in the district. They hired me. I had 3 interviews. I was kind of questioning whether I would get the job or not. And I eventually got hired. And 1 month into working with the kids, I was my background was ran. I never didn't disclose my criminal history, and I was fired. Or let me stop. This is how it happened. I was hired, fired, and rehired again.
I am 37 years old, like everybody else. I have, you know, needs and things of that nature. I have a 4-year-old daughter who actually goes to the school where I am working at. And that, for me, was just another blow to continually trying to debunk the myth that folks who have prior criminal convictions are all those stereotypes that we think of without having to name them. But I know that it's made me a stronger person and a better advocate for people who face the same background as I have. And I really support Ban the Box because oftentimes people don't even get a chance at all. They fill out the applications. I've interviewed, my mouth is a little dry up here. I've interviewed 3 and 4 times for positions. And like a gentleman said earlier, sometimes I'm overly qualified. I've even flipped burgers and pumped gas and bartended. And not that I'm above that, but that is not what I saw my career as being. So being able to remove that question from applications and then housing applications would really help because it gives people hope. And oftentimes the people who want to work will work. And not everybody's going to be a perfect, outstanding citizen, but the ones who get out and want to work and reclaim their lives and show people that they can make it and that they're not a stereotype and that they won't fall into those cracks, I think it's important to showcase that. And since Oregon is always the number one entity in leading things and doing things, I think it'll be great for you all to support this. And I don't think that all the titles that I have, they don't make me who I am. I would have never thought I would be a human rights commissioner. I would never thought I would sit on the board of the Metropolitan Public Defenders. That was the furthest thing from my mind. But they didn't look at my background. In fact, they actually were more welcoming of someone like myself who has continually gone through barriers to get to where I am today. And I'm not even at the pinnacle of my success. I always feel like I'm 5 or 6 years behind, because of time I lost. So overall, like, I really know this would be good for Oregon. Instead of us spending $32,000 a year to house an incarcerated individual, it would be great if we could empower them and employ them, to earn their own $32,000 a year, which is about $2,600 a month. Not everybody will have that opportunity, but I guarantee you, once this ordinance is passed, it will boost Oregon's growth. It will build relationships with families. It will make more employees more employable. And it's just something that I believe in because I'm a victim of not being employed or having to go through so many barriers just to gain employment. And it's the same thing I tell the kids I work with. Let me be an example. Don't make the same mistakes I made. Even though I knew better and I was in college and all those good things and homegrown, I still fell through the cracks. And as we heard earlier, the school-to-prison pipeline is real. And if we are not able to get a hold of that and really tackle that right now, we don't want to come back 15 years from now and talk about the statistics and percentages by way of the school-to-prison pipeline and then have to do another ordinance to remove an additional box for people who have barriers. So I'm in support of this, and I appreciate the time that you guys are taking to hear this. It's something that is important. It not only affects Black folks, it affects white folks, the Latinos, it affects everyone. And I support it, and I ask that you guys do the same, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's now bring up some folks that have worked to bring this all together. Tom Chamberlain from AFL-CIO, Doug Cooper from Mercy Corps, and Mike Alexander from the Urban League. Come on up. Good afternoon. Welcome. Yeah. I'd like to be first, Tom. Just push the button there on the base of your microphone. Right there. There you go.
You know, it's pretty much been said. The process screens people out who have served their debt to society. I've lived in the city all my life, and I've seen Portland grow from a city that had a lot of prejudice in the 60s to a city today where we consider ourselves to be pretty tolerant. My Portland's about giving people fair chance and ban the box. The only thing I would add to the conversation is that don't create a policy that's hollow. I don't think that's a course you're going down, but create a policy that really does something. Create a policy that gives people a chance to get in the workplace and turn their lives around. If you're not going to do that, and I don't think that's your intention, you know, don't go through the exercise, but these people deserve a chance. That's all they're asking for. My name's Tom Chamberlain. On behalf of the 300,000 men and women of the Oregon AFL-CIO, we support fair chance.